So let's talk real estate. It's a hot topic in the Northwest. A white-hot market like Seattle's creates winners and losers, depending on which side of the transaction you happen to be on. These days, you'd probably rather be a seller than a buyer. But back in 1985, when Merlin Rainwater and her husband bought their place, the roles were reversed. They were able to score a little bungalow on the east slope of Capitol Hill for just $50,000.
There was this wave of young, white, liberal activist folks who thought that it would be cool to live in a neighborhood where we had black neighbors. And of course, we also thought it would be really cool to have a cheap house.
It would take years before Merlin would come to see her move in a different light, as something driven by forces she wasn't even aware of that placed her and her neighbors in a much bigger drama of social change. Sitting on her front porch, Merlin says that vision of living in a kumbaya integrated neighborhood did not play out the way she'd hoped.
Over the years that I'd lived in the neighborhood, I gradually became aware that the black neighbors weren't really all that excited to have us white folks moving in. And I started to think about the question of displacement and the fact that the people who had been forced to leave those houses did not do so because they wanted to, for the most part, and that, you know, people have come and gone over those years. But during all that time, there has been only one black family that moved in.
One of the reasons this wave of idealistic young white people was able to score such affordable houses lies in Merlin's lap. They're detailed maps of Seattle's neighborhoods created by the federal government in the 1930s. These maps are a visual display of the discriminatory housing practice known as redlining.
So redlining refers to the line that outlined these red districts on the map and defined them as hazardous for investment.
And how did those red lines delineate neighborhoods by race?
Well, one of the really surprising things that I came across is the racial map of Seattle, which was created at the same time as the redlining map. And I have it here. And there's a northernmost section that's labeled Negroes. There's a sort of intermediate section labeled Jewish. There's a sort of horizontal east-west section that's Orientals, and then a southern area called Italians.
This is all in the central area.
This is
area.
All, and if you look at this map next to the red line map, the area that was colored red in the red line map pretty much outlines this area that of the undesirable racial categories on the racial map. For this little section, which is the heart of the Central District of Seattle, the only justification that the surveyors give for considering this hazardous is it states this is the Negro area of Seattle.
So what was the consequence then if an area was redlined? What did that mean?
Well, immediately what it meant was that banks were unwilling to issue mortgages for people to purchase property. So people who did purchase property in those areas had to look for other sources. So you would find that it was more expensive and more risky to purchase a home. People were more likely to lose the homes that they were able to buy.
The old maps that determined where people could buy a house inspired Merlin to tell people about this ugly history. Today, she gives bike tours along the old red line boundary. On the day we meet, she gives me a tour on foot.
Three houses here were little one-story cottages, basically. The owners added on to the houses. And then this lot, the little cottage was demolished and this brand new house was constructed.
Is it recognizable compared with what it was like when you moved in?
Barely, yeah.
Redlining ended in phases in Seattle, with its final death in 1976. And as Merlin learned more through her research, she came to an uncomfortable realization. She had benefited from that discrimination. You see, back in the day, her house was in the red zone.
We had benefited from having an inexpensive house, partly because it was in a neighborhood that had been neglected and that had experienced disinvestment over generations. And then we benefited by the end of redlining because we were able to get a federally insured mortgage and very reasonable terms to purchase the house.
Did you have an emotional reaction to that revelation that you are wrapped up in this in ways you hadn't understood before?
Yeah, it was painful. I like to think of myself as the good guy, you know?
And that was the idea when you came here, as you said. You one of the things that attracted you to this area was you wanted to have black neighbors. You wanted to be partially a force for integrating. And then to find out it's so much more complicated must have been tough.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a gradual learning over the last, many years. It's much more complicated.
Even though decades have passed, redlining has left a lasting mark. We walk up to 19th Avenue East. On the west side, across the street, outside the old red line boundary, there are brand new townhomes, the kind that touch off bidding wars, and a restored pre-war brick apartment building with flower boxes. Inside the line, on the east side of 19th, we see several homes that are subsidized housing.
The red line side was slower to develop than the non-red line side, and I don't really quite know what to make of that, other than it's something to observe that, on this the formerly red line side, there's still a number of older houses that look like maybe they're just waiting for the opportunity to be turned into something else. Okay, we're standing at the corner of 19th and Madison, and in 1928. This block across the street was owned by probably 20 or 30 different individual property owners. And they all got together and hired a lawyer and drew up a document, one of these things that we refer to as racially restrictive covenants.
In addition to redlining, there were these legal documents that prevented blacks, Asians, Italians, Jews, anyone considered undesirable, from moving into a house on a specific block. White homeowners would draft an agreement that might sound something like this.
The parties hereto signing hereby mutually covenant, promise, and agree with each with the others and for their respective heirs and assigns that no part of the lands owned by them, as described following their signatures to this instrument, shall ever be used or occupied by or sold, conveyed, leased, rented, or given to Negroes or any person or persons of the Negro blood. And it was significant to me to note that Mount Zion Baptist Church, the second black church to be established in Seattle and a very prominent, respected institution in the black community, had just relocated to the lot diagonally across the street at 19th and Madison in 1920. So it felt particularly insulting and harsh that it was directed at the prominent members of the black community that had their place of worship directly across the street.
The documents Merlin has collected tell a story of how racial segregation didn't just happen. It was the result of deliberate policies and decisions. And she's dedicated to making sure that history reaches the people who need to hear it most.
White people, thanks to segregation, are able to live our lives without really engaging with African Americans and other people of color. That really shapes the whole way that we're able to deal with this legacy of racism. Because of segregation, white people often know nothing at all about this history. I was at the Douglas Truth Library, which houses the African American collection, is located in the middle of the Central District. And there at the library, there was a very interesting display of photos and documents about the open housing struggle in Seattle. And my first reaction was, you know, why is that here? That should be in Laurelhurst, you know, that should be in North Seattle, that should be in Wedgwood, in the parts of the city where white people live who don't know this history. The people who live here in the Central District, they know this history. They may not know the details, but they certainly have lived it and experienced it. People in North Seattle, they have lived that history as well, but we don't have to recognize it.
Merlin Rainwater is founder of Central District Red Line Tours in Seattle. To learn more about the tours and to see pictures of the old Red Line maps, you can go to our website, knksoundeffect.org.